Going Linux, episode 184, Computer America, number 54. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Whether you're new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And it is day two, and our brand new website is up and running. Yes, the brand new Computer America website is up and it's working, and we could not be more pleased. Ben has done an amazing job. And of course, tonight is the second Tuesday of the month. That means it's our all Linux show. All right. Yes, because Linux is, you know, it's a very important operating system. It is the alternative operating system to Windows or Apple's Mac. And so every month we devote an entire Computer America show to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, excuse me, tonight is the night for you to give us a call. And joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome into Computer America. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing fine, and I like the new website and the new look to the chat room. They are wonderful.
Thank you. All right. So, getting to the topic of Linux tonight, what we want to do basically is I always ask Larry before going there to come up with a general topic of discussion. Now, while we're discussing that and talking about it, you can also call us. You can communicate. If you have a Linux question or any question about Linux, this is the place to be. But right now, let's get to our Linux subject. And the topic for the month for this month is the Linux community. What is it, and how do I join? Okay, so let's lead off with that, Larry. The Linux community. What is it, and then how do I join?
Darned if I know. No, wait a minute.
Well, thank you for being here tonight. It was a pleasure, you know.
Yeah, so the Linux community is simply, well, it's not exactly simple, and yet it is at the same time. It's a bit of a paradox. So the Linux community is everything surrounding Linux and the people surrounding Linux, most importantly, the people surrounding Linux. That includes the users. It includes the developers. And it includes many, many other people.
Okay, and we're going to get into that.
There are people,
right?
And
after
they do
the,
things.
Right after,
and it's
the,
right.
Community
of sorts.
Right after the break, we're going to come right back with Larry Bushy, the host of the Going Linux podcast, and we'll really get into it. Yes, it's our all Linux show tonight. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Twenty-one minutes after the hour, here on the Computer America show, we are talking about Linux. It is our second Tuesday of the month, and we are embroiled in the third Tuesday of the month. We are embroiled in the subject of Linux. Larry Bushy continues on with us, and we're focusing on a topic of the show, which basically is the Linux community. What is it, and how do I join? And I know we were right up against the break when you got started, Larry.
Sorry for being so vague, but yeah. I heard the music and I thought, ooh, I can't go on forever with this one.
Nope.
So let's pick it up where we left off. So the Linux community, what is it? Well, it's really the people surrounding Linux. So it can be the users of Linux. It can be the developers of Linux. It can even be just people who are interested in Linux who don't use it. And as we talk a little bit about how you join the Linux community, that'll become a little more clear. So really, I've got a whole list, and I'm sure that'll appear in the show notes, of some things you can do to become part of the Linux community. And the number one thing on the list is use Linux. Seems kind of obvious, but that would be the quickest and easiest way is to start using Linux. But you don't have to be a Linux user to be part of the community. You can simply be interested in it. Just ask questions about it. You can go online, take a look at the forums, and ask the people in the forums about Linux. And we'll have links to Linux forums in the show notes as well. About, you know, what is Linux, what's their experience with it. And as soon as you're in there, you're part of the Linux community. You're asking questions, you're helping answer questions, possibly. All of that makes you part of the community. It's really that simple.
Yeah. All right.
So
go ahead. I mean, so how do you get into the Linux community?
Well, as I said, one obvious way is to begin using Linux. And
sure.
once you start using Linux, let's assume that you've gotten onto a website or just ask a computer guy. Mm-hmm. you might try calling into Computer America.
Wow, there's a concept.
And ask a few questions. And you know, once you've started to be curious a little bit about Linux and you've started to dip your toe in the water, you might try a live CD, which is a CD that you can put into your CD drive and boot your computer from the CD to try Linux without installing it on your computer. It'll just run from the CD. It's a full version of Linux. It'll give you everything you need to give a full and complete trial to whatever Linux distribution that you're trying out. But once you actually started using Linux, even just trying it out, you can help others to learn to use Linux, especially as your own skill becomes more and more. You can help people to use Linux more effectively. But to become part of the Linux community, you really only need to be interested and start asking questions, because those questions are on the minds of any new user to Linux, and the answers that you get will help other people with those answers themselves.
All right. So those are all good things to do. And what's a lug?
A lug, yes. So you can join a lug, and a lug is a big galoot, you know. It's an abbreviation for Linux Users Group. It's kind of a takeoff on the old computer user groups, and in fact, I think computer user groups have been around for as long as computers have been around. But Linux Users Groups are just that, groups of people, like-minded people, some not so like-minded people that are a member of the same group that like using Linux, want to share information about Linux, and that's another way that you can become part of the community. So one of the things you can do is, as you begin to use Linux or start to use Linux, look for a Linux users group in your area. Just go on to Google and search for Linux users group with the name of your city or town. And it will more than likely find you a Linux users group near you. And if you can't find one physically near you, there are online Linux users groups that you can join. And one of the things that you get as part of your membership of Linux users group is a lot of support, advice, and help in using Linux. And if you're a Linux expert, it allows you to give other people advice. And there are a lot of things that go on depending on the group you belong to. They can just have meetings and do installations of Linux on computers. They can help you with the installation. They may have speakers that come in to talk about Linux and open source software, the software that runs on Linux. And they will help each other with using Linux and getting it installed and maybe diagnosing trouble that you may have with your computer, whether it's Linux induced or whether it's just hardware induced or something else causing the problem. They can help out. So that's what a LUG is.
Okay. And so it's a specialized user group, in other words.
Exactly
focused,
right.
Yeah, it's focused specifically on Linux. And
So are there different levels of LUGs? Like, is there, you know, a developer group and then, like, you know, kind of a end user consumer group that really just wants support with it? You know, are there different groups, or are they all kind of lumped into one?
Well, it depends on what's going on in your area. If there happen to be a lot of Linux users and Linux experts in your area, if you're in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area, for example, that's the city where the headquarters of Red Hat Linux is. You're more than likely to find quite a few Red Hat employees around there, and they may join local LUGs and be the experts in the LUG. But there are new Linux LUGs that are dedicated to new Linux users, and experienced members will help other users. So you really just have to look around to find one that might be specialized in your particular version of Linux, a distribution of Linux, as they're called. Or you can just join a general Linux users group. And most Linux users groups, whether they're specialized in one distribution or not, they're really not that partisan. They will help you with questions about anything. If you join a Linux users group that's focused on Red Hat, for example, or Ubuntu, those folks, they will know more about that particular distribution of Linux, but Linux is Linux. They'll help you out regardless.
Okay. Weird question here. Would you recommend Craigslist to find LUGs and other Linux members? Because they actually do have a Linux category under their discussion forums.
I have never thought about that. The fact that they have a Linux category, that's encouraging. I don't know. I've never tried.
Go to any. It's under any. You know, wherever you are on Craigslist, you go there, and under discussion between legal and local politics, there's Linux, and and there are people discussing Linux in your area, and kind of sad that you haven't heard about it. But I'm sure if you're looking for local Linux users, might be an idea.
Yeah, you bet. Sounds like a great idea.
All right. Well, we're going to take another break, and we'll continue on. This is very illuminating, the Linux community and how you can get help and how you can join it and things that you can do. And Larry's got more ideas about, doing this, like writing a blog about your conversion to Linux. All that's coming up and more. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Our Linux Tuesdays, and messed up there. Right here it says, write a blog about your conversion to Linux. Do people love sharing their success stories? Are they doing it for support, why would you write a blog about your going Linux?
They want to keep it secret, that they're successful.
Yeah, hide it. That's what hide it. Hide exactly. It. No, we want to talk about our conversion, our successes and our failures, and that really helps other people. And I've seen a lot of folks trying out Linux who have been writing blogs for years, and for some reason they decide, they want to give Linux a try because they've heard about it, and they decide to write a blog post about their transition to Linux. Usually, the first time they try it, it's a big disaster, and it makes for great reading. It really does. And then the next time they try it again, they've learned a little bit about their mistakes, and so it usually turns out that the second time they try it, it's much more successful, which is why I recommend that as you're trying Linux for the first time, you get in touch with somebody who knows a little bit about Linux to help you through those rough times, because as we've discussed before on the Computer America Linux third Tuesday of the month, you need to think a little differently when you use Linux, and it's not really that different an operating system. I mean, it runs software. The software opens. You use the software. You close the software. You go on the webs with a web browser. So it's all basically the same functions you're doing. Things may be located in a little different place.
Yeah.
That's not really the challenge. The challenge is you've got to unlearn what Microsoft has taught you. So you have to learn that you don't have to reboot your computer after you install software. You don't have to reboot your computer after you get security updates. You don't have to wait for the second Tuesday of the month to get your security updates. They get pushed to you automatically. You don't have to download additional software that allows you to get updates on the applications as well as the operating system. It all comes to you automatically. And when you install your software, you're always asked for your password. So those are the kinds of things, simple things, but a little different way about thinking about how you're using your computer that you do need to get used to.
Now, I don't know what to ask next. I mean,
well, maybe what we can do is we can go down some more of the list of ways you can get involved in the Linux community, not only through asking questions but helping other people.
Well, yeah, but I had a question about what you said, it's not formulating. I talk for a living and I can't formalize it right.
First you put the and then you put the words after.
I know how difficult it was to start a blog here for Computer America, you really have to be motivated to start a blog. You're not recommending a blog for everybody. It's for some people who have an interesting story to tell about their Linux conversion, perhaps, maybe.
Sure. If you've already got a blog and you're thinking about converting to Linux, write a blog post on your blog you already have about your conversion. What I've seen people do is they've been using Windows forever, they've been using Mac forever, and they want to try out Linux. And they say, okay, I am going to try Linux and try using Linux exclusively for 30 days. And so every day they write a short little blog post, sometimes a long blog post about their experiences with Linux. Here's what I learned. Here are some of the good features. Here are some of the things that I'm struggling with. And people will comment back on their blog with things like, here's what you did wrong. Here's what you could do right. They help. If you've got readers of your blog, people will help you. If you don't, people will find it eventually, like 5 years later, and go, that's an old version of Linux. But, you know, people like to blog these days. And if you've got a blog, write in it about Linux. That will help someone sometime down the road to avoid some of the issues that you've had by virtue of the fact that you're discussing them. And if you're not good at writing, I'm not saying you have to start a blog.
No, sure. Well, when you take that to the next level, you say start a podcast about Linux. Well, you've already done that, you know.
Well, I have.
Why do we need another podcast on Linux? There's yours. You got the Going Linux podcast.
Sure, but there are plenty of them out there, and everybody's got their own take on it. I mean, we focus on the new user of Linux, and our objective is to help people to learn to use Linux, use it more effectively, and use it day-to-day to get things done. Mm-hmm. There are other Linux podcasts out there that are focused in on Linux news. There are some that are focused on a particular distribution of Linux. There are some that are affiliated with magazine publications. There are some that are affiliated with a specific distribution of Linux and promote some of that distribution's propaganda, if you want to look at it that way, or publicity.
I hear what you're saying. In other words, it's just like a car magazine. You can buy there's so many car magazines because some of them focus on different things. Some talk about old model cars. Older cars. Some talk about newer cars, restorations. Just talk about new models. I mean, so you're right. So it's like the Tonight Show, and there's always room for more than one because the subject matter is so diverse that you can't have one thing for all different
Oh, absolutely.
So,
there are podcasts out there that are general computer podcasts that talk about Linux and Windows and Mac and Solaris and other things that people have never heard of. Mm. And there are magazines out there, online magazines like Linux Journal and Linux Today and Linux Insider, linuxquestions.org/dot has a Linux section. There are lots of these things out there to help you get started. And you can become an author for a lot of these online magazines as well. Submit an article. Talk to the public. There's lots of ways to get involved in the Linux community.
So yeah, start a podcast about things you've never heard of about Linux.
There you go. You got to learn about. You got to know something about it to talk about it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or you can be the host, not know anything about it, and get a special guest in that is the expert
to
talk about it.
Wow, what an idea. What do you think, Ben? You think we should do that?
It'll never catch on.
No.
Maybe not.
So this Linux thing, you say?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So, other things you can do, you can provide help on Linux forums. So in other words,
Sure. We've got some links in the show notes to many of the Linux forums, and there's one that I just noticed that the linux.org website has had a revamp, and I'm still trying to find some of the articles that I was linking to that broke as a result of their revamping. They used to have a list of lugs that we talked about earlier, but that seems to be gone now. But they do have a new forum, and we've got a link there, and I've also got a little bit of a snarky link to other Linux forums as well. It's the "Let me Google that for you" link. have you heard of that, guys? Let me Google that.
I never heard of the word snarky, let alone
snarky. Okay.
I have heard of "Let me Google that for you."
Yes. Well, that's that. If you want to click on that link in the show notes, you'll find out what that's all about. But it does eventually give you a list of Linux help forums out there, and it's rather extensive. And there are Linux forums out there dedicated to specific Linux distributions like Red Hat or Ubuntu or Linux Mint, and there are others that are a little more generic, if you will, and like the linux.org, which is a general Linux website that has a forum that will help any Linux user. And I have to say that the forums for, let's say, Ubuntu, if you ask a question in there about another Linux distribution, they're not going to chew you up. They're going to help you. Linux is Linux, and the Linux community is a very friendly community.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and that "Let me Google that for you," that is actually kind of cool. So you can find
it. It is kind of nice. It's a nice way to be. I've seen some support organizations use that just to be a little bit, as I said, snarky about helping people. You know, you could. It's kind of the comment, you could have Googled this yourself. So let me just send you a link.
Okay, there you go. All right, so let's continue on some of the things that you can do. So we've got. We've got the forum set out. Send in bug reports when something goes wrong.
Sure. So as you begin to use Linux, if there's something wrong with the software or one of the applications, the way Linux works is, let me kind of back up and describe the way this whole thing works. Okay. And maybe we can do that after we have the break. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. So we'll do that. So when we come back, we'll continue on with Larry Bushy. This is the Computer America Show. It's our all Linux night here on Computer America. And we will continue to answer those questions when we come back. Stay tuned. We are talking to Larry Bushy. It is our all Linux show tonight. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We're talking about the Linux community, what it is, what is it, and how do I join. And so basically, we were talking about sending in bug reports when something goes wrong, and also fix something if something goes wrong by telling the developer? Do you tell the developer first, or do you fix it first?
Well, if you've got the skills and you can fix it,
yeah,
you can send the fix to the developer. And as we were starting to say before the break, unlike proprietary software, the Linux community is made up of many, many developers as well as new users and experienced users. Mm-hmm. And as a result, if there's an experienced user out there that comes up with a fix for something, they can contribute it right on the development website for that Linux distribution or even the Linux kernel if it's a basic Linux issue. And that will be tested, of course, and maybe even improved on. And then if it's a real fix that fixes something that's generally a problem, it will be incorporated into the code for that program. And some of the communities or some of the distributions, some of the development communities are very, very careful to include credits for anyone who has contributed to anything, even if it's just a simple fix for something. So you may even get your credit as part of the developer list for the Linux or open source software. So Linux is developed by its users. And even though some have big companies behind them, like Red Hat and Novell and Canonical and companies like that, there are other Linux distributions that may be run by one guy or one gal out there. And they're dependent on the base Linux kernel development and the Linux community at large to help them with maintaining their software. And it's as a member of the Linux community, you can be a user, you can be a helper, a supporter, an advocate, or a developer, and you can write documentation. You can provide translation services for other languages. There are lots of things you can do to help contribute to the community. But as you get started, even if you're just learning from the community, you're a member of the community, and your questions are going to help other people who have similar questions. Don't think there are dumb questions, because somebody else has a dumber one than the one you ask.
Now, I think most of these other recommendations are definitely not for beginners. I mean, these are all more advanced.
Yeah, exactly.
Involved.
We've
yeah.
got things like you can work for one of the top companies that develop the Linux distributions themselves, and we've got a link to some of those. We've also got a link to some of the top 10 organizations sponsoring the Linux kernel development. If you want to work for some of those, there's a list there. And the software that's used on Linux, things like the LibreOffice or OpenOffice suite, things like the Thunderbird mail client, or even the Firefox web browser that gets used on not just Linux, but Windows and Mac as well, those are open source projects where you can contribute, or you can work for some of those organizations as well. We've got links to that. And there's a link, I believe, to the – yes, okay, we've got a link to www.linux.org. The Linux organization on that site, they have links to a number of things, beginner courses, intermediate courses, advanced courses. And over on the right and towards the bottom – but there is a list there of jobs.
Wow.
Oh, there it is. Yep, bottom right. Jobs that are open. Right now I see Red Hat Linux Administrator, Senior Engineer, Web Developer. Lots of different jobs open at any given time for people with Linux skills. So as you build your skills,
yeah,
you can work for one of these companies, or you know, there are plenty of other companies out there like IBM or Intel or Oracle that contribute to the Linux code, even though their products are something other than Linux itself.
When you say provide translation services, are you talking about the spoken word, or are you talking about machine coding?
No, I'm talking about the spoken word. So okay. For the documentation, all of the software will have some sort of help, and some will provide a manual as well. And typically it's provided to you in PDF form, but the developers typically are in one country or may have multiple countries, but there are plenty of languages that they need help with translating, because they may not have people on staff that know the language that the original manual was developed in, and also the language that they needed in for a country that may be using Linux. So those kinds of translation services.
There you go. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're up against the top of the hour here at Larry, and what we're going to do when we come back is we're going to switch gears. And we're going to start reading some emails. And we have emails from all over the world with questions about Linux. And we have them from Austria and the UK.
Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And we continue on. It's our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we are in our first hour, we talked about the Linux community and what it is and how to join it. And it's all for getting help and giving help with Linux. And hopefully you picked up a lot of good tips from there. And we're going to, as I say, kind of shift gears into this hour and read some emails that they've received in the past month that are relative to different topics, some to our show, some are about the Linux. And let's start off with an email that you got from Martin, who lives in Austria, okay?
Yes, and all of these people are members of the Linux community.
Aha!
There you go.
There you go, yeah.
So Martin provides a suggestion for Bob, who sent us a voicemail a while back. Bob was looking for a way to replace the default search for an application methodology within to replace that way of doing it, searching for an application, with a traditional hierarchical menu in Ubuntu, a specialized version of Linux. Mm-hmm. He writes, "Hi, guys," and this message is at Bob. "Try Ubuntu 12.04 and install the classic menu classic menu indicator. It's an add-on for the Ubuntu distribution of Linux. It requires a separate repository to have it available. Searching for what a program does works quite well in the Software Center, which for new users is the equivalent of the add-remove programs that you might see in Windows. It's a repository of all kinds of applications. So he says, searching for what a program does works quite well in the Software Center, but not in Dash. Another definition here, Dash is, think of that as like a dashboard. In the Ubuntu Linux distribution, they have changed the interface so that you end up looking at kind of search windows and icons on the left-hand side, kind of like a launcher, on Mac OS X at the bottom of the screen. They have it on the left-hand side, and when you click what would normally be a menu kind of icon, comes up with a little search dashboard, if you will. So that's what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. What he's talking about there. So continuing on, Martin writes, however, there is a category view on the bottom right within the dash, which unfortunately is too many clicks, I find. So when I want to search by category, which is less often than more, you are familiar with which is less often the more you are familiar with Linux and the more you are using certain applications. I usually use the classic menu indicator, which places a normal GNOME menu on the upper right. Best regards, Martin, Wildum from Austria. So we started off with an email that needs a lot of a lot of definition for people who aren't familiar with Linux, unfortunately. But I was going to say that Ubuntu is a distribution of Linux. There are different distributions or different versions of Linux developed by different companies. And Ubuntu has done something fairly recently with the user interface. It's kind of the same sort of thing that Apple is going to, with a little more touch orientation to their Mac OS X user interface, and what Microsoft is doing with its upcoming Windows 8, looking at a little more graphical, a little more touch-oriented. And so Ubuntu did the same sort of thing, which threw a little quite a few people off for a little bit. And folks are trying to find better ways to use Ubuntu and its Unity interface. And I suspect that as Apple and Microsoft venture into the same area that's been pioneered by the Linux community, that they'll find a similar sort of thing where people are saying, "Ooh, this new user interface, it's way too complicated." It's certainly been intended to be simpler, but many people, just because it's different, will find it way too complicated, and they'll be searching for ways to switch it back to the way it was or get back some of the features that they used to have. And this is an example of that, a classic hierarchical menu of applications.
Are people making operating systems for iPads, other kind of tablets, using Linux? I know that the Android is, are Linux based already, but
yes.
Is there kind of like a crowdsource kind of?
Yeah, there is a I forget the name of it now. It'll come to me eventually, but there is a tablet that's developed for the KDE desktop, which is KDE is a desktop that's used on many of the Linux distributions on the desk on the computer desktop, and that particular organization, KDE, has developed a Linux-based tablet, not Android-based, but a Linux-based tablet that runs a distribution of Linux that they have developed, and they've put their own desktop environment on it. But it's touch-based, it is full Linux desktop, and it's specifically designed as a tablet, for a tablet, but with full Linux functionality as opposed to the Android functionality, which is kind of a specialized interface that uses the basic Linux kernel, but specifically designed by Google for what they want it to do.
Is it called Spark by any chance?
Spark, I believe, yeah, something similar to that, if that's not it. I think we've mentioned it on previous episodes, and the name isn't coming to mind.
I got a Spark tablet here, 7-inch tablet.
Uh-huh.
And that, I think this is it.
Okay.
So, okay, well, good news there.
Excellent.
All right. All right. So that hopefully answers
Bob's question. Yeah.
Bob's question.
Thanks
okay.
to Martin. Yeah. Right. Thanks to Martin.
Thanks to Martin.
Should we go on to the next one?
Well, you see, there's a perfect example of how the Linux community works, you know?
Exactly right. Kind of, it's almost like I planned this.
Well, well, let's head on over to the UK and let's talk to Dave.
Yeah, and Dave also provided feedback for another listener, as members of the Linux community are wont to do. And his advice kind of takes on the notion of, if it's not broke, don't switch distributions. He writes, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill." For new listeners, Tom and Bill are my two co-hosts on the Going Linux podcast. Dave continues, "I am replying in response to one of the listener emails about NVIDIA issues," that's a video driver, a video card, "issues in Ubuntu 12.04 and other GNOME 3 distributions. I have been having the same issues since Ubuntu 11.04, mainly since the introduction of Unity and the latest Xorg, etc." Xorg is a display utility in Linux. Being a member of the NVIDIA forums, I have found out that NVIDIA know about the issue on the 173 driver, but as they say, it's not a major bug and they're not fixing it. I currently run Ubuntu 10.04 long-term support on a Sony VAIO VGC-V2M.
I just love those numbers. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah. Everybody likes to spout off the model
Sony
number.
Sony monitor.
Yes. Sony monitor. It's an all-in-one media PC with a GeForce FX 5700 GPU on board. Yeah. Just spout those specs. That's great.
Exactly.
I have managed to get Ubuntu 12.04 long-term support to work with the NVIDIA's latest driver, but when a kernel update happened, that's the Linux kernel, the screen went back to snow and color was all mashed up. I soon moved back to 10.04 long-term support as it runs as smooth as heck, and being a partially sighted radio ham, yes, Bill, I'm a ham, 10.04 long-term support magnifiers runs great, as does FLDigi, CQRLog, along with other ham radio-related software.
I don't know, Xorg, that sounds like something you would find in World of Warcraft, like a sword or something. We'll be right back. 22 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. We're talking with Larry Bushy. It's our all Linux show tonight. Everything you want to know about Linux and more. And we are reading an email from Dave in the UK. And I made the silly comment that an Xorg sounds like a weapon from World of Warcraft.
It does, kind of.
Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to go, you know, let that go fade into the dark night. But
no, we
no, you brought it back. So.
Yeah, yes, I did.
Now we have to deal with it.
The Dark Knight's a movie, though. I mean, it doesn't quite fit. Yeah, anyway.
Nice. Thank you.
Mixing metaphors. So let's continue on with wrapping up Dave's email here. So he's providing some input to a listener who's having a problem with the NVIDIA driver on the latest versions of Ubuntu on certain computers. So he continues, I shall stick with Ubuntu 10.04 long-term support even after its end-of-life date of April 2013, or when I've read that NVIDIA have finally fixed the driver. Oh, there's a couple of GNOME 2.6 distributions that work with the NVIDIA cards. One is Descent OS, which runs under an Ubuntu base and runs good, as he says. All the best, and I, for one, will not be going back to the Windows OS. And Bill, hope to meet you at one of the high frequency bands soon. 73, that's by in ham terms. Dave in Dudley, the UK.
And of course, with the grammar police, it should be runs well, not runs good.
Of course, of course. Yes.
and you know, all the other things. I mean, you're thankfully you're actually translating a lot of this. Half this email is in acronyms, you know.
Because he said
end of life, but actually he has EOL. I'm saying, isn't that related to AOL? No.
No, not quite.
End of life. So yeah, and GNOME. Now, is it, you pronounce the G? I thought the G was silent. It's just GNOME. But the people.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of controversy about that. Folks at the GNOME Foundation pronounce the G for one reason or another, probably to differentiate it from the word gnome that it's spelled like.
Maybe they say knife. You know, who knows?
That could be too. Yes.
Okay.
I never realized how big the whole ham radio thing was, but I was actually just driving around the other day, and I would have like completely ignored this bumper sticker, but it was a bumper sticker. And said, throw out the TV, forget the computer, buy a ham radio. I'm like, ham radios are actually popular, I guess. I'm seeing more and more of them.
Yeah, they are all over the world. And as this writer, as Dave alludes to, he's a ham radio operator in the UK. Bill, my co-host, is a ham radio operator. And there are lots and lots of programs, applications for Linux that help you with ham radios. So there are ham radio I'm not a ham radio operator myself, so I may get some of this wrong. But essentially, what they do is they use the radios in what they call digital mode. And what Dave has in his email, FL Digi, is one of those applications that runs. There's the version of it that runs under Linux. There's a version, I think, of that software or something similar that runs under Windows. The CQR log is a logging program, and what ham radio operators do is they record logs of when they have contacted people, especially a long distance away from where they are, and they have distance contests and things like that. So they keep logs, and they're not just logs of, hey, I talked to this person on this date, but also information about what radio they were running and what were the weather conditions, because the weather affects ham radio as well. So I'm getting quickly out of my element here, but I've been learning a lot about ham radio with a co-host that's a ham radio operator. And there's also a Linux podcast that is specifically for ham radio operators. It's called Linux in the Ham Shack, and those two guys are, shall we say, entertaining. not safe for work.
and I just had to look this up because no one really spelled it out for me, and I didn't realize what it was. Ham radio is amateur radio.
Yes.
Ham is short for amateur.
Yes.
I don't know if that needed to point out to anyone else, but I myself never made the connection until I actually Googled it.
Yeah, you used to
thank you very much.
You used to think you thought it was a pork loin.
Yeah.
No, I thought they were hamming up on the radio, so ham radio. But
well, a lot of the amateur radio operators are hams.
Yes, they are.
In fact, they all are hams, depending on how you define the word. Pork or not. I think it's time we moved on to another email. Off the top.
We milked this for all it's worth. Yes, exactly. let's go all the way to Michigan now. And Bill has been waiting a long time to hear his email on the show. And Bill, your lifelong ambition has been met because you're now about to hear your email heard on the program.
Yes. So Bill wrote way back when. Bill wrote, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill. Re your interview with John O'Bacon." So translating that name, John O is the community manager for the Ubuntu Linux distribution. And we had an interview with John O on our podcast. And you can go to the archives and listen to that if you wish. Bill continues, "I thought Bill, the co-host, did an excellent job. I can see the controversy, though. I like John O. However, I do have an issue with his clumping all Linux users not liking Unity into the elitist category. In fact, quite the opposite. I would call Canonical, the company behind Ubuntu, quite elitist when they put out something like Ubuntu 11.04, knowing full well it's incomplete and virtually dysfunctional. It's like Canonical saying, we're on a bigger goal. Are you 10.04 users too stupid to see it? Yeah. My question is, hey, don't hold back, Bill.
Just exactly.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah, right, exactly. On that note, we're going to answer go to his question that they're going to ask, okay, when we come back. You're listening to the Computer America Show. It's our all-Linux show. It's the third Tuesday of the month. And Larry Bushy is here with us. We're reading emails that he's received over the month, and we're now answering those emails. We'll be right back with more after these commercial messages. This is Computer America.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show. Larry Bush is here, and right in the middle of this email. Please, if you will.
Okay.
Continue.
So Bill was talking a little bit about our interview with John O'Bacon, the community manager for the Ubuntu distribution. And he says, my question is, Canonical proud of Ubuntu 11.04? Mm-hmm. And this isn't Canonical's first introduction of things before they're close to ready. he's being critical here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Network Manager and Pulse Audio represent lesser pains for users, but fall into the same category as Unity. Just by way of explanation, Bill is criticizing Ubuntu for developing a new user interface and, in his opinion, sending it out before it was ready. Network Manager is just that. It's a wireless network manager that was also criticized for being released before it was ready. And Pulse Audio was a new way of handling audio on Linux that was also criticized for similar sorts of things, possibly unjustly in the case of Pulse Audio. But editorials aside, let's continue with Bill's email. He says, "I don't doubt for a minute the elitist viewpoint exists as Jono states, but it's far from everyone who happens to be against trashing a distribution for a greater cause. Larry, you're the prime example of a non-elitist in my book, and I'm sure it is a major part of your success. Jono may argue a polished 12.04 wouldn't have been possible without the steps that started with 11.04. This, I imagine, is true in that it may have taken longer, but the cost of going through that transition makes me shudder. A separate fork of the distribution could have taken longer, but produced the same results. Keep up the good work, guys. Bill in Michigan." Well. So, essentially here, as I said, Bill is being critical of Canonical in releasing Ubuntu 11.04 before it was ready. But I have to say that Canonical releases a new version of Linux, Ubuntu Linux, every 6 months. However, they do release long-term support releases about every 2 years or so, and they are supported for 3 years. And as a result, it's been their contention all along that if you want a rock stable version of Ubuntu Linux, use the long-term support release. And those six-month incremental releases, they will use to help develop the Ubuntu distribution to explore new areas, like introducing new technologies, new user interfaces, and so on. And those releases in between the long-term support releases are not exactly experimental, mm-hmm. from the perspective that they are, way out in left field, but they will involve the introduction of new technology that maybe hasn't been perfected yet. So for folks like Bill, who apparently, from his comments, want to have their Linux distribution just work, stick with the long-term support releases. And, okay, so you don't get the latest and greatest new technology, but that's the point. Stick with the long-term support releases if you want rock-solid stability. Sure. If you want to be on the bleeding edge of technology, but adopt the latest release.
And expect bugs when that happens.
Exactly right. Okay. Exactly
right. All right. Well, you know, it's a fine line, but it all depends, how important being cutting edge is, or how important stability is to you, you know.
A lot of people will be critical of Linux for being slow to develop, if it's slow to release new updates and so on, if they're talking about distributions like Debian. They typically like to release when they're ready and no sooner, and so there's no fixed schedule. And then others will be critical of organizations like Canonical that release Ubuntu Linux every 6 months, whether it's ready or not. And that's a little bit of an overstatement. They do put a lot of effort into making sure that it's ready. But as I said, in those interim between the long-term support releases, they are going to test some new technology, and that's where they're introducing new things that as you said, Craig, will break.
Yep, that's it.
You can't please everyone all the time. You know, someone's going to have a bone to pick with something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, our next email actually is from Vince, yeah. And I included this one here, Ben, because I was hoping you might know a little bit about Xbox.
Yeah.
I know a thing or two. Okay, good. So let's get your opinion after I read his email here. So Vince has us here at the Going Linux podcast puzzling over why the former Xbox Media Center software provides better graphic resolution than either native Linux or native Windows media programs. Vince writes, "Great show, Larry. I think it would be worth mentioning tips on using a solid-state drive using Linux." And we may do that. Also, maybe you can explain what makes my display show greater video resolution using XBMC, the Xbox Media Center software, compared to using other video programs. At first, I thought my graphics card was not good enough to display decent video. It's a GeForce GT430 with 1 gigabyte of memory. But as stated above, XBMC dispelled that. I have a VDPAU enabled, and I even installed XBMC on a Windows machine and came up with the same results. Superb resolution versus Windows Media Center. Thanks, Vince. I have no idea why XBMC would give you better video unless it's simply that they have optimized it to give you better video. Any insights, Ben?
Well, Xbox was, not only does it play games, it also plays DVDs and it plays any other kind of media you want on TV and stuff like that. So obviously their video software is going to be optimized, you know, to play videos on any resolution, on any TV size, on any monitor that you might have your Xbox hooked up to, you know, and the Windows Media Player might just, you know, they can't expect it to be on computers. They don't expect it, you know, people to, you know, hook their TVs up to their computers. I know people do it, but, right, you know, the Windows Media Center really isn't made for that. So when you have an Xbox, it's made to be a video player as well. Like, that's one of its primary purposes.
Makes sense.
So I can kind of see why, you know, it's kind of more focused towards that end rather than just, you know, these pieces of software that are, you know, more focused towards computers and computer monitors and kind of the, you know, the not so strenuous act of, you know, being more compatible with more resolutions.
By the way, I wanted to ask, Ben, I know the Sony PlayStation had an upgrade to play Blu-ray DVDs. Did Xbox ever do
that? The PS3, yes.
Yeah, did the Xbox ever do that?
No, they promised it in their next one, though. So the new Xbox that's coming out next year will have a Blu-ray player.
Got it, okay.
So that'd be my guess. I could be completely wrong, but
I think he makes a good point. I mean,
absolutely.
Windows Media Center is supposed to be about on a PC. Xbox was designed for TVs just from its inception, and so obviously, it makes perfect sense.
There are a lot of TVs and a lot of resolutions, so you know the Xbox should support many, many, many of those.
Mm-hmm. Right, and same thing. XBMC is Media Center software that was written originally for the Xbox and has a Linux native version as well as a Windows native version now. And I think you're quite right. That's the only conclusion that I could come to, is the fact that it's optimized for the best resolution. I mean, that's what people want to play games on. And a general display is just that, more general or generic, and will give you kind of a more plain vanilla video experience.
And you got to search far and wide and dig through a lot of people to find someone who says, "I use Windows Media Center a lot. I really love that program." You know, not too many people really love the Windows Media Center.
Yep. So. Especially those people who use Linux, but that's a different story.
They're probably not too fond of Microsoft altogether anyways.
Yeah, it could be.
Right. Next email, Jim and hey, Craig, North Carolina.
Yeah,
North Carolina. There we go. And Jim has a lot to say here, so let's get into it. Jim wrote, "Hi, Tom, Larry, and Minion." our co-host Bill. He's been dubbed as our chief executive minion, and he's getting a lot of ribbing for it. Yeah. So Jim says, "Is a minion a cross between a mint and an onion?" I don't know. I had somebody say he's just kind of a henchman, you know? So maybe that's the case.
And I'll tell you what, why don't we take a break here and then come back to this, just because we're just kind of getting started. Did you ever see the Megamind, the Minion, was a little fish.
Yeah, there was the Despicable Me, ball. I
yeah.
think.
No,
had
no,
it
was, yeah, Minion. Yeah, that's what I think of.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're... that and Ben.
They were all over IHOP. You couldn't miss it.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll continue on with Jim, who's in North Carolina, wrote this email. We're just going to start in with him, and we'll continue on with this email right after this. Stay with us. All right. So Larry Bushy continues on with us, and we were just started reading the first sentence of the email from Jim in North Carolina. Go ahead.
We have. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
I've been using Debian testing, Wheezy is the code name of that distribution, since Ubuntu decided to change to the, Unity desktop. I tried to like it. I really did, but it just didn't work for me. So here's myth busting. Codex. Debian testing installs with all codecs that can be legally installed. You can play unencrypted DVDs, MP3s, DivXs, etc. with the base GNOME install, just like with Windows. If you want to play encrypted DVDs, you have to install a decryptor, libdvd-css. It can be downloaded from the VLC website. Since the .deb, which is a Debian installation package, is only i386. Why do they still make single core computers? I had to rebuild it from source code.
Wow.
And he talks about that.
And by the way, the encrypted DVDs, he's basically, that's a polite way of saying when you buy a store-bought CD that has a movie on it or something.
Exactly. Okay. And his point here is that Debian doesn't install those things by default, whereas some of the other distributions like Linux Mint do. So some more myth busting, as he calls it. Mate and Cinnamon, those are desktops. Why, he says, when you log into your Debian GNOME desktop for the first time, after you enter your username and before you enter your password, click the session drop down and select GNOME Classic, enter your password, click or hit enter, and you're in a desktop session that looks exactly like GNOME 2, but it's actually a GNOME 3 variant, written and supported by the GNOME team. You can tell it's GNOME 3 because to change the dock contents, you have to alt right click on the dock instead of the simple right click. Also, Nautilus no longer opens audio files on mouse over. You have to use your audio player. GNOME Classic is compatible with Compiz and Emerald, so you can eye candy it as much as you feel like. The advantage of not using Ubuntu repositories is you get all the things Ubuntu rips out. By the way, Microsoft likes Unity so much they're emulating it for Windows 8. Yay.
Yeah.
Non-free. The simplest way to install Debian is with a USB stick if your computer supports boot from USB. If any non-free drivers are needed, they can be dropped in the root directory of the stick. Now, by driver, I mean the .deb installation file. The installer has no idea what a .ko file is. I'm not sure I do either. After all, the installer is just a shell script. It needs the instructions on the Debian package to know what to do with its contents. If you add a directory, drivers, firmware, Smurf, it will simply ignore it. The other non-free thing you will probably want is Flash plugin-non-free, which is a real Adobe Flash for Linux for your YouTube videos. Don't uninstall anything. This means you, KB5JBV, another ham radio operator. Just add the Flash plugin. The browser will automatically select the Adobe plugin when it needs to play Flash. I guess that's enough. Yay, Debian, for now. Keep on keeping on. Jim, W4JED.
And, you know, that was a great email, and we have just enough time to ask you what's up for the next going Linux. What's going on?
Okay, we're going to address the cost of freedom in our next episode.
The cost of freedom?
Yep, freedom. What's the cost of freedom? And, you know, Linux is a free operating system, but free with a capital F is free as in freedom as opposed to free as in free of charge. And there are some costs to going with free as in freedom software.
Evidently,
we'll be discussing that on the episode.
All right. And of course, they can get that the Going Linux podcast. And we also have a link. We have a link on our friends link on our new website to that as well. Listen, Larry, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much, and we look forward to you being with us next month on the third Tuesday of the month in October.
And sounds great.
That's the 23rd, the 16th, and we'll see you then with more Linux, okay?
I will be here with Linux.
All right. Thanks again, Larry.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.